Record now in our next matter, docket number 84861. Both sides ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Pata, do you wish to reserve time for rebuttal?
3 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay. You guys good?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, ready.
All right, you can go ahead.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court, Paul Pata for the appellants. And the appellants in this case are the estate of Rebecca Powell, her father, Lloyd Creasy, and Ms. Powell's three children, Darcy, Taryn, and Isaiah. For ease of reference, I'm just going to refer to them as the Powell parties. Your Honors, this is a case about whether a court can issue a monetary judgment in favor of a party that exceeds, and dare I say in this case, far exceeds what the court ordered by way of decision. Here, in this case, we have a decision that, well, we have a judgment that awarded monetary relief to the Valley Health System appellees that was not supported by any underlying decision or order. The district court, that would be Judge Weiss, issued a decision on a motion for reconsideration where he believed he lacked jurisdiction to award any monetary relief. And what he said was, all I can do is give you this order, which you can then take to the Supreme Court and ask for a honeycut remand. Whether the judge was correct or incorrect in that belief, the most relevant and important fact for purposes of this appeal is the judgment. The judgment does not properly reflect what Judge Weiss actually decided in this case. There's three issues that have been raised in this appeal. One is, what was this appeal timely filed? And I'm going to start by addressing that point, even though it was raised by appellees, because it implicates a question of fact. Whatever Your Honors decide in this case, you have to decide based upon the answer to the following question. What, if anything, did Judge Weiss award by way of the decision on the motion for reconsideration? If he awarded nothing other than the opportunity to get a honeycut remand, then there was no basis for the judgment. So we have to look at the plain reading of the decision, and really the factual predicate for appellee's position in this entire appeal is that Judge Weiss ordered and granted them monetary relief, and that subsequently the judgment was simply the fulfillment of that decision. And I don't think any reasonable interpretation or reading of that decision, one could come to that conclusion. And to that extent, I would refer you to Judge Weiss's actual decision, which is set forth in volume 6 of our appendix. And starting on page, what is bait stamp 597, what Judge Weiss said is, quote, if the court were inclined to reconsider its previous decision, the most it could do would be to enter a honeycut order. And then Judge Weiss concluded his decision by saying that he believes that if the court had jurisdiction to decide this matter, the court would now award attorney's fees in the amount of $110,000. But then his concluding paragraph is that, quote, because this matter has been decided on the pleadings, any future hearings relating to this matter are taken off calendar, and the court requests that counsel for defendant prepare and process a notice of entry with regard to this matter and convey this decision to the Supreme Court pursuant to Honeycutt and Dingwall. So that is a clear reflection of what Judge Weiss believed he was ordering. The other thing is that when he said, I don't have jurisdiction to grant any monetary relief, as you know, under Honeycutt, the most a court can do is deny a motion. A court cannot grant a motion. That's the whole reason why Honeycutt exists. So you cannot grant a motion. You can deny a motion. And the denial of that motion, as Foster interprets the Honeycutt process, is to allow a party to then ask the Supreme Court for a remand. And here's the certified decision. Now I would like Your Honors to please send it back and let the district court judge, who the court blesses with some jurisdiction, make a decision. So instead of doing that, what the Valley Health System appellees did was they had a pending appeal and they dismissed their appeal voluntarily.
And again, going back, you agree was a tolling motion in district court with a motion to reconsider.
Under the AA Primo case, Your Honor, I would have to concede that it was a tolling motion.
Right. So their appeal before us, how does that vest jurisdiction in us? There's a tolling motion. We don't have jurisdiction.
Well, that issue was never decided. The court issued a show cause order asking appellees to respond and say, That's correct. They didn't answer that question. They chose another option. I'm sorry.
You're saying that they can't withdraw their appeal. They have to have it remanded by us in order to comply with Huntington.
Well, what I am saying is that is certainly what Judge Weiss believed. And that was what informed him in making his decision. Ultimately, what we're deciding is whether a party can get a judgment awarding it money when there's no underlying decision or order finding to that effect. And so if Judge Weiss did not have jurisdiction, then his decision was proper. If he did have jurisdiction all along and he could have made that decision, well, that's not reflected in the underlying decision on reconsideration. And so what the proper and probably wiser choice for them would have been to say, well, okay, well, let's take Judge Weiss up on his offer. And they could have presented the court with the request for a remand. It would have kept the issue live. But what is unfair to us, my clients were never given the opportunity then to address the judgment, because what does the judgment become? The judgment then becomes reconsideration of reconsideration. It becomes a decision that exceeds what Judge Weeks himself believed he could do. And he's now memorializing it in the form of, I would have certainly contested it. We would have litigated that. We would have briefed it. There was an issue that we raised below, which was, how could the judge originally find, under applying the Beatty factors, that my client's decision to reject the offer of judgment was neither made in bad faith, nor was it grossly unreasonable. And then when they filed the motion for reconsideration, Judge Weiss didn't change his opinion on that. He said, I still find that the decision to reject was not unreasonable or in bad faith. And that's actually, I can give you the exact citation to where he found that. That's set forth in lines 12 and 13 in the fourth volume of our appendix in page 495. So he never altered that position. And yet, how did we end up in a situation where we have...
How do you reconcile the statute of limitations with that statement?
The statute of what limitations?
The statute of limitations on the act.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Your Honor.
Your mic is turned to me.
You're saying that he said this was not brought in bad faith.
Correct.
And based upon what?
Based upon the Beatty factors. He applied those factors and he said that I cannot find that the plaintiffs below acted unreasonably when they rejected the offer of judgment, nor did they act in bad faith.
If under a Beatty analysis, let's just say it's 2-2, right? Plaintiffs bring a case in good faith. Plaintiffs weren't grossly unreasonable in rejecting an offer. But on the defendant's side, the offer was reasonable in timing and amount. And then the defendants, through their documentation, proved the fees were necessarily incurred. And they're, as I said, reasonable in amount. Is there any one factor that somehow mandatorily dictates the court cannot award fees?
I think that there are a number of factors, and your Honor is correct. Those are the two that you cited are factors that a court would consider. And then it comes down to abuse of discretion. But ultimately, my understanding has always been of Beatty that the predicate has to be a finding that the rejection of an offer of judgment was either made in bad faith or grossly unreasonable. And once you come to that determination, then that really ends the inquiry. But even if the...
I think one might argue that if the rejection was made in bad faith, you're getting all your fees on the side. If the rejection wasn't grossly unreasonable, it could still be that fees are awardable and appropriate, but maybe not in a full amount, maybe in a lesser amount, whatever. I think you've kind of conceded, look, there's discretion within the district court.
I would agree there's some discretion.
Thing, though, because this is very confusing to me trying to read through this. My understanding is after the judge issues his decision on reconsideration and then the appeal is withdrawn, the judgment is just submitted to the court in chambers and signed off on. There was no
correct
hearing.
No hearing, no briefing. And in fact, it was submitted over our objection because I responded by email saying I cannot agree to this.
Okay.
There was no basis to do anything other than either move to set aside the judgment or stay enforcement of the judgment, which we did, by the way. And Judge Bell at the time, now Justice Bell, granted that pending this appeal. And so the only other option was the judgment was entered on June 2nd, I believe, and we filed our appeal on June 7th, 5 days later.
Okay. And I was thank you for clarifying that, because I was confused on that as well. And I was a little troubled too about the court's kind of about face on these attorney's fees. And it seems like the only thing that changed between his first order and the second order was this belated submission of documents and billing statements. Was there something in the motion for the respondent here below that said, I will offer to produce these documents in camera, but, you know, but the court rejected that? And so, because my concern here is a little bit, you know, you do a motion for reconsideration, there has to be new evidence, new law, intervening law. But if the evidence was available at the time of the submission, it should have been submitted. But if they offered to do it and the court said no, so I'm just confused a little bit procedurally on how what happened there.
Justice Lee, you have correctly summarized the factual and procedural history of what happened. That's exactly correct. And I think that we have to be careful in not conflating Brunzell with Beatty. Beatty is entitlement to fees. Brunzell is the reasonableness of the fee being sought. That is what I believe Judge Weiss decided, was that their fees were reasonable based upon their late submission in the motion for reconsideration. But he never changed his opinion on Beatty. That was, that's the point, is the predicate and the foundational finding was that there is absolutely nothing wrong that the Powell parties did in rejecting this offer of judgment. The whole basis of it was, could they predict ultimately what the Supreme Court would do on a writ? And if, my goodness, if anybody could do that, I wouldn't waste my time being a lawyer. I'd be playing blackjack if I could predict what's going to happen in the future. And so ultimately, that's what Judge Weiss found, and that was a reasonable decision. All he found on the motion for reconsideration was that, yes, now I'm going to entertain these items that should have been provided earlier, and there was no explanation as to why they weren't provided, but they were then provided on reconsideration, and then he considered them. But then that's when he rendered his decision, saying that I still find that the rejection was reasonable and appropriate. However, these fees are also, I would award these fees if I could.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good afternoon.
Adam Garth. I represent the respondent, Valley Health System. So I think we need to correct a few things about what went on here. And there's an assumption that somehow a number of these issues have even been brought to bear by plaintiff's counsel in the court below. And that's what we've pointed out in our brief. The underlying decision with respect to the fees and on motion for reconsideration, the appellants never interjected one factual argument or one legal argument, save one, which is, court, procedurally, you shouldn't even consider the motion. They didn't address whether the fees and costs were appropriate, whether they were accurate. It was just a simple argument. Don't consider this.
Well, they did make arguments in opposition to your original motion for fees before the granting of the reconsideration. The opposition to your motion did contain more substantive arguments.
That's correct, Justice Lee. But we're now no longer dealing with the old decision. Now we're dealing with the new decision. And they have an obligation to come forth and justify why it is those fees would be considered inappropriate. And they never did that. And now what they seek to do in this court is to have you make factual determinations that they had an opportunity to oppose in the court below but didn't do it. That's a waiver of an argument.
What about the court's finding in the first motion, disposition of the first motion, that they believe the plaintiffs did bring their claims in good faith, that they rejected the offer, it was not grossly unreasonable because it was essentially an offer for $0. You were just waiving your right to seek fees and costs. And so when he goes through that analysis, it doesn't seem like he pivots on that at all. The only difference is being the analysis of reasonableness once the documents were submitted.
Well, Justice Lee, the The problem that we had here with Judge Weiss is that, and not to disparage anybody, but he bent over backwards for these parties. And this court rejected his analysis of on the summary judgment motion and did it overwhelmingly. He then came back and made a statement in his original order, which said that somehow, and there was an implication that somehow we hoodwinked this court into overturning his decision. He said that somehow we convinced the court to overturn it. Obviously we can't definitively get into the mind of anybody, but that kind of language implies that, gee, I'm sort of upset that I was overturned. Okay, well, that's what appellate courts are for. Sometimes you get overturned, sometimes you get sustained. But I found that to be rather strange language for a judge to be saying, especially since it was such an overwhelming amount of evidence demonstrating that the statute of limitations had been blown. So he then comes back and goes through a rather substantial analysis of why it is we're entitled to those fees. And we made the motion for reconsideration, as you pointed out, Justice Lee. We made that motion originally and offered a full hearing. Say, have a hearing, we'll give you everything. But I don't want to try
that
out.
Why wasn't that given to the court at the outset? Because motions for reconsideration, unless you're saying it was clearly erroneous.
Well, it was part of the original motion. And we made that offer as part of the original motion because these are private bills for experts that we've used.
Let me jump in.
Sure.
You once the final judgment is entered, you have how many days to file a motion for attorney's fees?
14.
Like, so let's take the analogy of a motion for new trial based on newly discovered evidence. It's not going to be timely if you file that motion outside the time period when the evidence was available to you within the time period. Under the scenario here, and this is what I think Justice Lee was talking about earlier, if the evidence is available to you to justify, if they're justifiable, your attorney's fees within the time period, and you don't do that, and then you later on say, well, I want to reconsider now, and I'll give you everything that you need to actually make a decision. How is that fair?
Well, it's extremely fair, Your Honor, because the fact is that Judge Weiss never wanted to have a hearing on anything. He decided under the rules of the court to say, we asked for hearings on it. He said, we don't need any hearings and we're just going to decide it on the papers, which is his prerogative.
Okay.
But he was, we volunteered and said, we will provide the court an in-camera inspection and give plaintiff the complete set of records if they want. I just don't want to put it up on a public website for the world to see everything that
filed
we
filed under seal, though. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You could have requested sealing that portion of the record.
We could have done that, but we seem to be getting into the weeds here on this because that issue.
Let me hold on. Part of our job is to get in the weeds. Okay. So hold on. And it's been very troubling because it seems to be happening more and more and more where attorneys are doing the absolute minimum to request fees and costs. And we're reversing and we're remanding and we're vacating because it's there for you to do it. But for whatever reason, people just want to file an affidavit that says I incurred $150,000 in fees and costs and they were all reasonable. But they don't want to provide the information. They don't want to go through and redact billing records. They don't want to address what it was that fees were incurred for or what the costs were related to. And it's just lazy lawyering. So I'm going to go back to my question. How is it fair to not produce what you have and then have to go in later and say, well, reconsider it now, Judge, and I'll give you everything. I didn't want to do it the first time because it's my client. Everybody's client. Everybody has a client and they have private records, but you have to do the job of redacting them and providing them.
Well, Justice Herndon, what we were intending to do was to provide all of this to the judge and plaintiff's counsel upon an appropriately scheduled hearing by the court. The court didn't want to hear it. The court
so
didn't.
How is the court going to go to a hearing and then have you then walk in with reams of documents and go through them?
That was
part of the motion practice to provide that to the court.
We were under the impression we were going to be getting a hearing. And what we were going to be doing was in advance, we're not looking to hide anything from anybody, disadvantage anybody. We were not looking to have the court not have ample time to review all of the evidence. They were going to get that evidence at a hearing that we asked be scheduled. He decided he didn't want a hearing, and we didn't have the opportunity. We didn't want to present the evidence because of the privacy factors. Ultimately,
that's a risk, counsel. I mean, I'm fresh off of being on this side of the bench and then came straight here. So, I mean, you had several options in the very beginning when you filed your motion for attorney's fees. You redact them. You ask to submit them under seal. Opposing counsel gets to look at them to be able to contest the reasonableness of the fees. That wasn't done in the outset. I understand what you're saying. I later offered that, and I would have done it if the court would have set a hearing, but you're not entitled to a hearing necessarily. Courts can decide things on the paper, so you take that risk when you omit records, right? And so I'm grappling with, was it fair to the other side to allow these documents to be belatedly produced and have Judge Weiss reverse himself completely on attorney's fees based on the production of these documents? Well, so that's, you're calling out the weeds, but that's one of my primary concerns.
It is fair because they had a full and fair opportunity on the reconsideration to take a look at all of the evidence. If Judge Weiss had stated, no, you don't get to submit it now, then that would be one issue. But that wasn't what he said. They had a full and fair opportunity on reconsideration. They received, if it was either 600 or 800 some odd pages of evidence. It was all submitted on the motion. They didn't address one bit of it. They just said, don't consider it, because if you don't, if you agree to have the reconsideration, if you agree to have the reconsideration motion, then you're giving them an opportunity to do this. But if you don't consider anything, then you don't even have to consider any of the papers that are attached.
Is it fair to say that they were following the law on the motion for reconsideration and the basis for that? If you have substantially different evidence, that doesn't mean you have, you know, if you have the evidence at the time, you don't get the second bite at the apple to reproduce it. So was your motion for reconsideration, are you saying it was clearly erroneous grounds? Or are you saying new evidence, new information? Because that's not new information. It's just belatedly produced.
Well, the judge also made a number of incorrect factual findings regarding the acceptability of the offer, whether it was made in whether it was rejected in bad faith or not. All of those factors were in there. And the point that we were making on appeal, in reply on appeal here, is that plaintiffs didn't address any of that. They don't get an opportunity that wasn't raised in the court below. They don't get an opportunity now to present before this court, based upon this court's own rules, a brand new case where if they didn't file a notice of appeal, which they didn't, and this court has already in two cases, one is Campos Garcia versus Johnson.
I apologize, let me interrupt you. They didn't file a notice of appeal on?
On the motion for reconsideration.
Okay.
They only filed a notice of appeal with respect to the judgment. And those are two entirely distinct legal documents. And the order, they were obligated in order to come to this court and argue with respect to the validity of what Judge Weiss had to say in his order, they were obligated to file a notice of appeal. They didn't do it.
But that order didn't award anybody anything. Or
the
he said, I this is what I'm inclined to do in the future if somebody gives me jurisdiction.
Which he always had, Justice Herndon. He always had jurisdiction.
Right.
That's where this is a false narrative. They're claiming that Honeycutt was implicated. I looked at the appellate rules, and under the appellate rules itself, motions for reconsideration are not tolling motions. It is a judicially created case in the AA Primo matter where this court said we're going to consider motions for reconsideration to be tolling motions. And in so doing, you then turn around and say, we don't have jurisdiction because and jurisdiction needs to vest somewhere. So if it's not here, it has to be there. So he always had jurisdiction, and the appellants weren't eliminated from the process. This wasn't some ex parte submission to Chambers. This was served and filed on Odyssey. They got a copy. They could have done a million different things. They didn't do any of those things. And the stay that motion that Mr. Pata was referring to was not brought until the night before a hearing on to demonstrate where the assets were. That was done before Judge Bell without, and there was no, she set a separate hearing. There was no stay application. He admitted to Justice Bell when she took over this matter. He admitted, we didn't file any papers to stay anything. We weren't even representing them. Once the decision on summary judgment came down the pike, we weren't representing them anymore. We had no reason to know that because there was no paper filed in any court or served upon us to indicate that they weren't representing the plaintiffs any longer. Those were the representations that were made to the district court. And now we're being asked to answer for things that they failed to address in the court below, that they're not permitted under this court's rules to be bringing up for the first time on appeal.
Counsel, can I just ask you, your time is running a little over. I wanted to just briefly address costs. So there was a memo of costs that was produced, but there was no documentation that was produced with that?
No, we produced a memo of costs, and they did not timely object to it.
Right, so they didn't file a motion to retax.
They didn't file a motion to retax, and days went by, it expired, and then they make a motion in district court to sort of get a reprieve from that. And Judge Weiss turned around and said, sorry, there's no provision in the civil practice rules to allow you to do that.
Right. And I don't disagree. I'm just trying to figure out whose burden it is initially out of the gate if you didn't produce any, because we've said explicitly that you do have to produce more than an affidavit to support a memo of costs. Did you do that initially, or was that also done later?
I, to be honest with you, Justice Lee, I don't remember. I don't have the record staring at me, and I don't want to make a
mistake. But in any event, you say that argument's waived because they didn't do a motion to retax.
That is correct.
Okay, perfect. And I'm sorry, one more question, if I could. Did the fees that were granted include prejudgment fees? Pre-offer fees. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Pre-offer fees. I don't believe they did.
Okay.
I don't believe they did. In fact, I don't believe they did. He went down the list of a very detailed thing that we provided. These were all our costs made before and after the offer of judgment. And I think all of those were from date of offer of judgment moving forward.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. All right. Mr. Pata.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me just start with the issue on the notice of appeal. As I said, there was no reason for us to appeal what was essentially the denial of the motion for reconsideration and granting them only honeycut relief. That was favorable to my clients. Why would I appeal that? Now, when we did file an appeal, what we said was we are appealing the judgment and all interlocutory orders leading to the judgment. Presumably, it's the basis, the order on reconsideration is the basis for the judgment. So that is part of this whole appeal. So I think that what counsel is representing to the court as a matter of fact, as the basis for our appeal, is simply factually incorrect. Now, with respect to the motion for reconsideration, I sat here and I heard a rather startling admission. I have never seen an attorney say, I'm going to bring my evidence to the hearing. That's not how it works. We have rules and we have process for a reason. And there's three reasons we have rules and process. We need to have a fairness in the process. We need to have consistency in the process, and we have to have predictability in the process. We can't have a process where an attorney simply says, I want my fees. I didn't submit all the information I'm supposed to. I would have brought it to a hearing if you, judge, had had a hearing. The judge is not required to have a hearing. You have to file a motion, and the motion has to be properly supported by admissible evidence and in the form of declarations saying these are my fees. They could have done that. I mean, they didn't do any of that. So our position has always been consistent. We vigorously oppose the motion for reconsideration. The standard is there new information that was not otherwise available? And he's told you the only information that he put before Judge Weiss was his own billing record. So clearly they were available all along. They never brought that to the judge until well after the fact. And so to attack Judge Weiss, who wrote decisions twice, giving a lot of thoughtful analysis to these issues, I think is completely inappropriate. I'll leave that alone, but it is what it is. Again, to have a fair system, we have to have predictability. We can't have a system where a judge can simply have someone present them with a judgment. And again, I don't know if Judge Weiss even read that judgment, whether it was presented to his chambers. Judges are busy. They have staff who will sign off on things. Maybe
we
it was
hope that they read. We read.
Well, I'm sure. But what I'm saying is it was not a signature. It was a file stamp type signature. Nobody said to Judge Weiss, by the way, we never did the Honeycutt remand as you had directed us to. Now just sign this awarding us $100,000. That's not how it works. I would have briefed that issue. So I view that judgment as yet another attempt at reconsideration of the reconsideration. And again, to the extent there's any ambiguity as to what Judge Weiss ruled, I would tell you that why Honeycutt and the Foster v. Dingwall case are important is because those cases stand for the legal proposition that a court under Honeycutt can only deny a motion, cannot grant a motion. The denial is then the basis for allowing the Supreme Court to remand and give the court limited jurisdiction. So why am I saying that? I'm telling you that because that informs us as to what was in Judge Weiss's mind. And what was in his mind was not that I'm going to award you $100,000. What was in his mind is I'm essentially denying your motion for reconsideration. And if you want to take it up with the Supreme Court, you can. We can argue all day long about whether the court had jurisdiction or it didn't. That's really not the point. The point is the court denied the motion for reconsideration, and then we end up with a monetary judgment with this award. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, counsel, thank you all very much. Appreciate your arguments today. This court will take the matter under submission, and we will be in recess until the next call of the court.